a very good Friday for those of us that are developing web feet and gills. We're going to check in with Rick Amerley in the first hour. California, Santa Anita already canceling for tomorrow, if you hadn't heard, as the wet weather, which they desperately need. Nobody, like Hammer told you the other day, last week, nobody's complaining because it's, you know, a desperate situation in a lot of parts of the country. But I didn't necessarily expect it. I think I opened the show yesterday, actually, saying, you know, we were getting some, at that time, a little bit of, maybe even a little snow. But it has rained for hours and hours and hours on end here. And, of course, we have to worry about turf for another 5.5 months. But but it'll be a fabulous turf course at Saratoga by the time we circle back. Now, what can you do? We'll see what else Hammer can tell us about the situation. But Steve Anderson, he basically laid out the scenario. Right now, the idea is that they'll run on Monday, the Saturday card. So they're talking an inch of rain just on Saturday. So this has been a it's a policy decision, and it's unsettled. And just looking at some of the details, Nate Newby explained 11 inches of rain since the meet started December 26th. 11 inches. Wow. So, and we're, what are we? January 13th. Friday the 13th, for those of us that attended Colgate, this is known as a Colgate Day. Colgate famously associated with the number 13. 13 men with $13, 13 prayers. That's the origin of, actually it was Madison University when it started. But Colgate 13, the choral group, the Colgate, 13 is a big deal at Colgate. In fact, if you watch the basketball team, you'll see 13 painted on the on the floor. You'll see it all over the place. It's great, actually. It's kind of cool. Just got to get through, right? You got to get through this patch of weather, and there's plenty of other places that we can keep ourselves busy on Saturday. What that cancellation though does mean, no coast to coast, coast to coast pick five this week, at least on Saturday. Assuming that things are okay on Sunday, they'll just keep evaluating, essentially. And we'll see what else Hammer can tell us. Give you a quick rundown. We got kind of an interesting Friday, and a couple of people needed different time slots and so forth. So things are a little upside down. James Scully is going to be early, assuming that that's okay with James, actually. I mentioned Hammer. We're going to hear from Hammer. And we're going to check in, actually, with a quick hit with Eric Hamelbeck, too. And registration opened yesterday or Wednesday for the HBPA convention. So we'll get a blast in from Eric the Tiger. And for those that want to come join us down at in New Orleans for the HBPA convention, it's gonna be an intense week. The HBPA, I'll be there to broadcast Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. The convention continues, but I've got to leave Wednesday afternoon to get to Vegas because of this. The NHC, Keith Shamblin is going to join us. By the way, we'll hear from Keith at the top of hour two, and we'll get an update on where everything is. We haven't talked in 3 months at least. Get a snapshot on qualifications and the season, the season for qualifications for NHC. Once you get past January 1st, the opportunity to qualify starts to narrow and dwindle. The window is closing for those that are trying to get to Vegas. So we'll check in with Keith. But that's going to be some week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in New Orleans for HBPA, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday from Vegas. And then actually get to come home for a few days, and then make the final spring swing after that into April and the final round of Derby preps. Fairly quiet on the Derby prep scene. Actually, the Pasco, we'll get to Tampa today, undoubtedly, and I think a couple different people have looked at Tampa races, and it's a really nice card tomorrow. For those that are looking for something, that would have had your attention, like at Santa Anita, the Tampa sequence tomorrow is high quality. Virtually all the way through, including the front half of the card, which has got a starter allowance and a maiden special going short for three-year-olds, second level allowance going short for fillies and mares, a mile and a 16th turf allowance that's quite good and well-balanced, and then into the stakes sequence and the late pick five. The late pick five, I think they've got the six, and they run the early pick five at Tampa. Yeah, one through five. The late second half of the card, races six through ten, you've got the Pasco for the three-year-old boys going 7/8, and there's some interesting horses. In fact, Mark Cassie's got a pair. He's got the favorite, that Champion's Dream, but Armstrong making a dirt debut. Interesting. Jerry Bennett and Ronnie Spatz has got a horse that he glommed in a maiden claimer, and then was able to break the maiden in the first start coming out from there. Loco Abario. Then the Wayward Lass, the fillies and mares going long on the dirt. There's two divisions of a 1 mile, 3-year-old maiden race, the 8th and the 10th, that Buffett, the Gasparilla, that's, of course, the 7/8 counterpart to the Pasco. But the two maiden races are really interesting, and quite a few, Gulf Coast, East Coast, Treasure Coast horses coming over. Chad Brown and Shug, among others, Tony Dutrow, Tom Albertrani, Chad again, Clement. Chad's got a pair in the second division, and he's got the pair in the first division. So four Browns in those two maiden races. Some nice pedigrees in there as well, and it's a nice sequence. Nice sequence. The Pasco. Whatever section you want to carve out for yourself, I think Tampa a very viable option tomorrow. We'll talk to, in addition to Scully, of course, we'll talk to Scott Shapiro, and Shap has got Turfway, of course, because that's his focus all through the winter, and the racing continues to be really good. So we'll talk to Shap. I think he also looked at some Oaklawn. And speaking of Oaklawn, we didn't have Dave Hill yesterday. No Thursday games, obviously, to worry about in the NFL, but a very interesting slate of six playoff games, wild card weekend. So Dave Hill will join us for his view of the six games, and to take a victory lap for his tremendous work throughout the regular season. So Dave Hill in hour two. So Shamblin, Shapiro, Hill, Scully, Hamilbeck, and Hammer in this first hour. And then hour three, we'll swing around to Nick Tamaro. They're back at, of course, at Sam Houston. We got to talk about, and it's a difficult situation. With the Racing Commission's position and what they're doing essentially to, I mean, what is really a circumstance that is hamstringing Sam Houston Race Park badly. Can you survive a season without simulcast from around the country? Yes, you could, but it's undoing years of work, years of careful attention to build up the interest level in Sam Houston. So a little frustrating. We'll see what Nick's thoughts are as they go into the second weekend of action, and we'll check on some Aqueduct too. The small carryover today, a little under 20,000 for the pick six. It's not a bad sequence either. I ended up printing it out. I didn't expect to, but I did. And the one element here is that it's been raining plenty downstate too. So you can expect a wet track, I would think, at the very least, a wet track at Aqueduct. Perhaps a drying out, but it happens to be, again, a nice sequence. And 7 by 6 by 7 by 7 by 8 by 11, and quality-wise, quite okay. There's a maiden 20 to get started, going 7/8. Starter allowance going a mile for fillies and mares, older. A maiden 40 for three-year-olds. Got a couple of firsters, and then you got a state-bred allowance sprint for fillies and mares as the fourth leg, 25 non-2, 7/8 as the seventh race, and then finally closes out with a 6.5 furlong for the boys, first level allowance, that group of 11 in the nightcap. It's an approachable sequence. Let's see if Nick's got any prime ideas for leans for those of you that are working on building tickets and have an interest on that front. Should close out a very, very quick note. The January sale finished yesterday, and very solid, down a couple of ticks from a year ago, but $45,408,962 horses sold, which was about 50 less than last year. Average price was actually up. Median was just off a little bit, 5% off. But it was a good 4 days, and a lot of brood mares and mares in foal. So a lot of people, building up their broodmare bands. And as we talked with Sid, some new faces that are getting in the game, which certainly love that. Really, other than that, what else? That's plenty. It's actually been a fairly copacetic week in terms of, or a couple of weeks really, to start the year. Right? Whenever I talk to anybody, what's going on? Nothing. It's a nice, quiet lead into to the year. Let's grab Eric for a couple of minutes here before we get to James Scully and to Hammer, and we'll see how many people we can bring to New Orleans, because it doesn't take conventions to get people to New Orleans, but it makes it more fun. Eric Hamilbeck, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I know I wished you a happy new year in texting form, but happy healthy, number one.
Absolutely. To you guys, too. Yeah, no, it's been a really good start to the year so far, and Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to New Orleans, so it's going to be a good time.
Well, I know you opened up. It occurred to me we were kind of chatting earlier, and it occurred to me, you know, I think Wednesday the registration opened. Tell everybody the dates and the specifics, and who's, you know, who should consider coming. It's going to be very important. You also announced a pretty notable keynote speaker as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we're very excited once again to have the Louisiana HBPA host us. They did so back in 2018 when we had the conference back there, and it was a blast back then. It always a great time to go down. So this year the conference is going to be a little bit different format, only that it kind of backs up a day. We'll actually officially kick off the conference on March 6th, simply with a cocktail reception in the evening. And then March 7th, that Tuesday, we'll begin the panels, which, of course, would include our keynote speaker. Attorney General Jeff Landry, he's been a really amazing person for the Horsemen of Louisiana, but now obviously also showing influence on the federal stage, and certainly pushing what's best for horsemen. And so we appreciate him being there and being the keynote speaker as a horseman himself, and obviously having a positive vision is something that I always try to make sure comes through our conference. But the one thing I did want to mention too is this conference is going to be a little bit different in that I was able to join up, so to speak, with the ARCI, the Association of Racing Commissioners International. Of course, their chair right now is Charlie Gardner, the executive director of the Louisiana Racing Commission. So Ed Martin and I had spoken and tried to do this a few years back during the COVID era. But now, with everything that's going on in the industry and the important topics that are relevant, really link us both together, the racing commissions and the horsemen. And so it was very timely to be able to get this conference with them. So we're going to have some joint panels. It'll be a little bit different, so to speak, than years past. But I think it's going to be a great conference overall.
And the details and registration at the website?
Absolutely. Just go to the website. We've got a banner at the very top. Just click on that. It'll take you to the information page. We've got a tentative agenda set up. I call it the generic agenda, but it lays out the time frame of everything. You can go register things to do in New Orleans. You can click on that if you're going down there to do some tourism things as well. But you can get both to the registration and to the hotel block from our website.
Well, and it's going to be at the Mont de Leon, right?
Yeah, it's going to be at the Mont de Leon, and I really thank the Louisiana HBPA, particularly President Bernard Chatters and Executive Director Ed Finaski. They really helped us kind of slide in there, because that hotel is where the Racing Commission meets. They do a lot of work with the horsemen, so they were very welcoming of us, came in with open arms and you know, helped us a little bit. That's one of the reasons we kind of moved to a Monday through Friday versus a Tuesday through Saturday format. But at the end of the day, they've been great to work for, and it's, you know, right there in the heart.
Yeah, right on Royale, and with one of my favorite stretches. I've never as many times as I've been to New Orleans, I've never stayed at the Mont de Leon.
I'll be honest, I haven't either. I've not stayed there. You know, obviously walked by it a few times, but no, it's Ed and Bernard in particular said it's an amazing place and just an amazing staff. So we're very happy to be there.
Excellent. I imagine you might have heard, I know you did actually, now that I think about it, while we've got you for a quick hit. Yesterday, I had Alan Foreman, ostensibly to talk about that paper trainer concept that has been more widely discussed of late, and something I don't think I'd ever really broached before. So we talked those legalities, but then he also offered not that there's any any real news, you know, since the adjustment, quote unquote, that came through in the spending bill. Anything to add to what Alan had yesterday?
Well, obviously Alan was spot on, and you know, the reality of now we are, as I put it to my group, you know, we've kind of reset the timeline again with the what we would call the supposed fix, the language that was inserted into the omnibus package in December, that in our opinion doesn't actually even address all of the unconstitutionality points that the Fifth Circuit's opinion covered. So again, that's our side. We're, even as Ms. Lazarus has said, you know, the courts are going to play out in the courts, and we're going to all continue to try to work towards uniformity in the best way we go forward. But yes, the timeline has shifted a bit. So now there is a new timeline, which I'm going to be honest, Steve, it's not even something I quite understand yet. But the long story short, everybody was focused on January 10th, and that was the original, from the original opinion, that was the original date that essentially there was going to be a stand down period, plus or minus 2 or 3 days. But when that fix language, we'll call it, was inserted, that then prompted the HISA attorneys to obviously file something that's going to, you know, it reset the timeline again. But the one point that I do want to maybe touch on that Alan, I thought very, very well addressed, is this confusion about the ADMC starting up, quote unquote, I'm using air quotes there, mid-March. And I was very happy to hear Alan lay it out, obviously correctly, but to lay it out specifically, that's an extremely aggressive timeline based on what is the timeline set by the act. And that's the 60 days plus the, you know, public comment period. And so we have, and I'll be honest, Steve, tried to find out when the ADMC was even submitted, or I should say resubmitted, to the FTC, because that's not public knowledge. I mean, it's not on their website. There was a quote, I believe, I think it was Ms. Lazarus, but it could have been somebody else, who said it was turned in at the end of the year. Well, the bill was signed on the 29th, which was a Thursday on December. The 30th was a holiday. You know, you go through the weekend, January 2nd was a Monday. That was a holiday. So when exactly did the submission take place? Now, we've been told that there were essentially no changes from what the FTC rejected. And again, they rejected it because it wasn't consistent with the act. And I would also say that I think that's still the case, because the order that came down from the FTC said that they weren't going to consider the ADMC until the constitutionality issues were resolved. Now I'm paraphrasing, but obviously that's not the case, because we still have other cases going on regardless of the opinion that came from the Fifth, whether it's going to change or not. So you know, again, I know I've pointed to a cliche of non-transparency, but you know, why is it a secret to know when the FTC got the rules that the public is supposed to be commenting on at some point when the FTC is done? So that's frustrating to me. You know, they have put every other submission on their website with the dates, and including the dates from the ADMC that was rejected. You know, that's still on their website, but yet they couldn't post when they sent it to the FTC. So the question is, did they send it even before the bill was signed? And that actually, well, let's leave it at that.
The inference is clear.
Exactly. With the conference, we're going to have fun.
That's what counts.
This is going to be a topic, but you know, we haven't sent out the official press release yet, but Eric Foster and Kittadan are going to be recognized and awarded as the National HVPA Claiming Horse of the Year. Todd Mostaller and our industry awards committee made an excellent selection, in my opinion. You know, the Dueling Grounds Derby winner, claimed twice, went through the barn of Mike Maker, won a stake, got claimed again. I mean, just the epitome of the award once again. You know, just like last year with Special Reserve. But at the end of the day, that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have SIS down there again. Love having Michelle Fisher and her group talking once again about, you know, fixed odds in the future, coinciding with sports wagering. But also, I've asked them to really talk about some of the aspects of positiveness that we see in wagering. You know, you were at the symposium and you heard a lot of discussion about how much money is being bet. We need to tap into that, because everyone who says, you know, handle, you know, should be progressing, well, here's an opportunity, because obviously the money's out there, because there are, if they're betting on table tennis, somebody's wanting to look at betting. So that's a good spin to a topic that's been addressed, but we're going to talk about how positive betting handle on different sports or venues is going now. So yes,
cool.
Yeah. And we'll do the ARCI model rules as an open session, which will be, I think, and Ed thought, extremely, you know, educational for many people who don't come to the model rules meetings to really see, you know, how things are actually done. And I think that's part of the misunderstanding of where we have been versus the implementation of HISA, how things are actually done. So people just didn't realize the links to which we go through. And then obviously, you know, the Kent Sterling Memorial Medication Panel, I think we're going to have a great lineup talking about the differences essentially of what we see that's been submitted under HISA versus what we have now. And then I'm really happy about our trainer discussion. You know, my great friend Jenny Reese is going to moderate a trainer panel with Brett Calhoun, Ron Fauché, and Jason Barkley. So really excited about getting those three on stage and just having some fun.
Outstanding. Well, and the conference, the HBPA convention is open to everybody. And
yes.
NationalHBPA.com, click on the banner, register, and come. And we'll remind everybody as it approaches. And Eric, We will cut into programming whenever there's something necessary to.
Perfect. I hate that you can't be there the whole time, but I know that NHAC is so important to the industry, and obviously you fit there well. So I hate that you can't be there for the whole time, but you'll be there broadcasting, and that's always extremely appreciative for you doing that.
No, I love it, and looking forward to it again, and. There's also a day at the races that comes, what, Friday is the race day?
We're actually going to do it Thursday. Yeah, Thursday again, just having back the day up on everything. Thursday will be a day at the races at the fairgrounds.
Excellent. All right. Well, Eric, I appreciate it. Thanks for checking in. And
thank you.
Not at all. We'll talk soon.
Talk to you soon, brother. Bye-bye.
Eric Hamelbeck, everybody. Eric the Tiger on your Twitter and, of course, National HBPA. We're going to go to James and start some conversation and get some we'll get some Kentucky Derby report from Scully. And I haven't asked Scully that much about his football play, but maybe James has got some playoff action as well. James Scully, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on. I hope you're doing well.
Absolutely, and kind of a quiet racing weekend, and made even more quiet by the weather circumstance that scuttles tomorrow's card at the Great Race Place. They're gonna proceed with caution through this heavy period of wet weather before we before we look at anything action-wise, James, let's get a little Kentucky Derby report. And certainly last Sunday, I had Jack Wolf. People may have heard Jack on the replay this morning or yesterday. We talked about Starlight's involvement and the 1-2-3 finish in the sham. Some thoughts on the Derby report front.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the sham, I mean, definitely I came away impressed by Reincarnate. I mean, he took a lot of pressure, dueled, looked like he was really, you know, could be perhaps in trouble. I thought of a far turn and persevered. And, you know, a horse that needed four starts to break his maiden before narrowly doing so in late November, he just continues to take a step in the right direction and could may continue to progress, maybe more for the Preakness or Belmont. But I did like his effort. National Treasure, I thought, you know, I understand it's a mile and such, and he's gaining at the end, but I thought when he swung out an upper stretch, you know, he sort of hung from there, and he was like the fourth horse to come back from the juvenile and run, and none of them have won. So I was a little bit, I mean, obviously he could, you know, continue to show more and develop into a top three-year-old, but a little bit concerned about his performance.
Yeah, interesting too that the way this turned out, and my only point of reference to the result when it came to Reincarnate was just some workout notes that, you know, it seemed like he was a work in progress, and then, you know, came out and performed really, really well. And even Jack Wolf, for those that listened to his, you know, recap, they didn't expect him to, you know, necessarily take that kind of a step forward. They've had high expectations for him, and it's cut out to be a nice horse. But that was something.
Yeah, you don't see too many top three-year-olds, you know, horses that are going to be running in these early season big three-year-old races that never run in a sprint. It actually debut, and is, you know, he might have four horses or other horses that need more time that will run first out on turf. But he ran Reincarnate twice in turf routes before he broke his maiden on the dirt in his fourth start. As far as the Jerome goes, Steve, I like the performance by Lugan Knight. I thought he flattered Victory Formation. Caught me by surprise. I picked him in there, bet him in there, but I thought he was going to sit just off the speed, but they just seized the initiative at the start and led wire to wire. You know, I think the one-turn mile distance, you know, hit him, you know, was good for him. A little concerned about, like, in terms of, like, the classics next year, you know, just his affinity for longer distances, sprinter, so might be more geared towards shorter distances than the Derby, and it sounds like they're going to skip the Withers and go to the one-mile Gotham for his next start.
That's what Michael told us, and you're referencing that second, the Grand Dam Roxy Gap, who was a very good 7/8 horse going back. That was a Melnick product.
Definitely like a little bit of a slow time, obviously. No qualifiers for the Derby this weekend, but yeah, it's going to really start picking up the following week. We got the LeCompte, that's like a 20 points to the winner. The week after that's the Southwest, and interesting, those two preps, you know, from year to year, the quality of those races can vary, but last year, Epicenter was in the LeCompte, and 2 years ago, Essential Quality was in the Southwest, so still the potential to see a really good horse running in those early season preps.
Agreed, and they'll let me think if they may be drawing. Let me take a look at this actually it comes up because they'll draw maybe tomorrow for let me see here.
I think they did Saturday.
Right. What is the date next week? That's the 21st? Yeah, 21st is.
Yeah.
So let's see. Saturday the 21st closes. They close tomorrow. Yep. So you'll have that card will be a week out, and you'll have your fields for everything there. Silver Bullet Day for the Phillies and Louisiana Stake as well, as the New Orleans Handicap Trail gets going. The Bradley for the turf front and everything else. Excellent.
heard you talking about the NFL. You know that I like the Chargers over Jacksonville. I'm more worried that Jacksonville peaked already. And the other game I like is I like the Giants. I'm a little worried. A lot of people like the Giants, but just I think they're going to show up with a good game and grab them a field goal at Minnesota. I'll take that.
What is the number? I've got to get the latest numbers for when Dave visits, because I had the Giants getting 3.5 and Chargers laying 1.5.
Chargers have gone to 2.5. I think Jacksonville opened up like a point favorite or something, but it's -2.5 with the Chargers and it's +3 with the Giants. Okay. Now the lines that really they've taken the biggest jump were the Bengals game. They opened 6.5, but obviously Lamar Jackson was in flux. He's been rolled out, so that line's jumped up to 9.5. And then even the San Francisco game, that game's gone back and forth. It started around 9.5. It went up to as high as 13. But now with this weather forecast, you know, it might be a low-scoring game. It's supposed to be raining sideways, I believe, at 4:30 tomorrow in San Francisco.
Wow. All right. The over-under, last I saw, was 43.5.
Yeah.
Well,
so, all right. They'll probably keep going down.
All right. We will talk more NFL. I'm sure maybe Schapp will have a play or two. Yesterday, Rich Eng was all over Tampa the Monday night game. That was Rich's play. And Rich, year after year, I don't ask him during the regular season, but he sharpens the pencil when it comes to the playoff scene and the road to the Super Bowl. Last year he was unbelievable. He was like 7-1 last year for the listeners, Rich Eng, when it came to the playoffs. How about some Oval action?
All right, yeah, we'll start. Let's start at Aqueduct. I'll do some give some picks at Aqueduct and then go to Oakland Park. I'll start in race number 5 at Aqueduct. That's a main special way for 3-year-olds at 7 furlongs, and I will use number 2 power and numbers in pick 5, pick 3s, multi-race bets. I mean, obviously it's not a horse I usually give out on your show 8-5 on the morning line, but he's by Gerben, who's getting runners, working well, and his dam was a juvenile grade 3 winner. The other horse I'm going to use in there that I wasn't recently little wanted to sort of mention it is I'm a little intrigued by this number 8 Marty's Magic. I think you can just draw a line through that race, last race on the turf. I thought that was a really sneaky effort 2 back at Saratoga. Powerful. He has it's a 6 furlong, 6 stakes win at Churchill for Asmussen. He won that day. To tap its conquest and Full Moon Madness. He ran second and third, came back. So Marty's Magic made the lead in that race. I expect him to be sent with Gomez from that outside post, and he's just one to consider at 15-1 on the morning line.
Interesting. And Horacio De Paz, who is just deadly.
Yeah, for sure. he is. Race number 6, I don't have the strongest opinion in this race, but I did think it was interesting to see this number 7, Kill Britain's Red, ship in here for Lucy Gadet from Laurel Park. She's by Golden Sense. You know, it's getting some runners, it seems like. Both Golden Sense and Violence, to me, have had some runners here of late, and they're both 12 years old. Luga Knight was by Golden Sense last weekend. And anyway, this filly, though, is bred to run earlier. Dam was a grade 3 winner. She ran second in the grade 1 Prioress, so was a really good sprinter. And she's a half-sister to Burnt Identity, who won the grade 2 Stanford at 2, and got a couple first out winners that are siblings. So I just want to mention, watch the Toad, 8-1 on Kill Britain's Red. It'll be interesting to see if she takes some early money, Steve.
Lacey Gaudet with Vargas aboard. Okay. I like it.
In race number eight, I'm going to go with in there. I'm going to go with the Motion Horse Affirmative Lady. I did think that trip last time, it was just such a brutal pace, and she went really wide too. And the thing I really liked also about that effort was that Julia Shining, outslugged her by a neck. She caught her like right inside the 16th pole and there for a second looked like she might go right by her. And I loved how the Affirmative Lady dug in that day for Motion. I thought that was a really solid effort to build upon. So I'm going to give her the edge over the, Chad Brown last out maiden winner, the two Pletchers that, both, look pretty decent as well. It's a short field, but you do have four decent fillies in there.
Yeah, Pletcher basically bookends the field, Gambling Girl and Aniston. You mentioned Chad with the maiden breaker occult with Dylan Davis.
And then in the finale, this is a race I like the horse in here. I like that number two, Complete Agenda.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a four-year-old colt by Calling, cost $250,000 way back in the day as a yearling. Really comes from a classy female family. To me, this is a colt that just got pigeonholed. He's a late runner. He got pigeonholed in these two-turn races. They ran him first time out at one-turn distance, didn't show much then. And then his next 10 starts, Steve, were all at two turns. And claim two starts back by Linda Rice from a non-threatening second at Aqueduct. I mean, he loves Aqueduct. He's got two wins in the second from three starts at Aqueduct. She cut him back to a one-turn mile last time. I thought that was his best race by far. I love that starter allowance win on a good track that day, won by open lengths. I think these middle distances are a perfect fit for him. And there's some pace in this 11-horse field. I think especially like that number 11, Mortasha, after sort of running flat in her last two efforts, I wouldn't be surprised to see her be asked for speed. And then you got some horses as well, like Prince of Pharaohs and others, Risk Profile and others that can show some speed. So might get a good setup. I like the Complete Agenda. I think he's moving forward. And like I said, he really likes Aqueduct as well.
All right, so basically you've laid out an approach to the late pick five. The only race did you look at the seventh at all? Might as well slip that in.
I did.
Go ahead.
I glanced at it. I mean, it's a tough race. I thought, the favorites look decent, but I'd be like perhaps spreading with horses like number one, Fast and Fearless, at 8-1, might show some inside speed. And it's the hot apprentice jockey, and then even Lord Gatling from the outside, but he might have a chance to run well too. So not a strong opinion in there, but I wouldn't just lean on the chalk in race seven.
Very good. All right. So there's some ideas. Call it the two with a little eight. The seven has got to be used in that maiden race six. The four and the eight in the starter allowance. Affirmative Lady, the three for Motion in the Busanda, and Complete Agenda, who we just ran. The Linda Rice, who is using Madison Oliver.
New Year's Eve, I believe.
Yeah, the 10-pounder.
And then turning to Oaklawn Park, I mentioned race number four. Start with that. That's an issue. Honestly, we're drawing some attention because Neuroscience coming back in there. I'm not trying to beat him. I'm not going to get too creative for the top choice, but I might take a shot on some exact things. My thing with Verifying, Steve, is that I did not think that maiden race was a very strong field. And while I give him credit for running second in the Champagne, he's coming back off the juvenile. We've seen a lot of these juvenile runners so far not win their first start back. I like Two Eagles River, the two horse, the 8-5 second choice for Chris Hartman. I thought a slow start really cost him last time, and Frosted Departure ran a good race to beat him. And if I'm looking to play this race straight, I might play him with just like three long shots, like number one, Gun Pilot, number three, Winner's Lion, and number eight, Ricker Point. They're all double digit odds on the morning line. And I think they all have a little bit of a chance to run well.
Well, and that Two Eagles River, it one of those horses that you see at other times, and this is one of those one of those associated opportunity types, because last weekend, really the last 2 weeks, when it came to victory formation, winning for Cox, and then with Lugan Knight, who was behind Two Eagles River in that allowance race at Churchill on closing weekend. On Stars of Tomorrow, and so that was a horse that you sort of, you know, kept an eye on, and it was a good second in the Renaissance. We'll see about the stretch out, but has had three sprints preparing for the opportunity to go a mile. And Chris Hartman, who he's only winning at 42% at Oakland.
Yeah, for sure. He had a good look at Philly. I'll mention in race number five. Race number five is a maiden special weight at 6 furlongs for 3-year-olds and up. I like in here number 6, Stellar Lily. She's 7-2 with Bayerano. She's had a little bit of, I thought, a claustrophobic trip from inside post in a couple races. Last time also, I thought, faced a nice filly, this Classy Bridget for Hartman, I think is a promising 3-year-old filly. So I like the outside. I like the post 6 draw for Stellar Lily. I think that will give her Bayerano some options. And plus, there's just not a lot of speed in this field as well. So looking for a favorable trip for number 6, Stellar Lily, in race 5.
You know, you mentioned Bayerano. It should be noted, he made the move away from Turfway for the winter and is off to a terrific start at Oakland.
Yeah, I'm going to use 3 consecutive hot jockeys. I'm going to pick this. I'm going to pick his Bayerano's horse in race 5, and then I'm going to move next to race number 9 and go with this number 1 Soy Tapatio, who
Tapatio.
gets Christian Torres, who's riding terrifically at Oakland Park, really an up and coming young rider. This is a 5-year-old gelding. That last year when Doug O'Neill had him, he did give him a couple of stakes attempts in the Sandian Handicap, Ali Sheba. Didn't really run well in either of those races, Steve, and sort of got into a little bit of a rut. But Deodoro gave him a little bit of time off and then put him in some easy spots. He's been able to gain some confidence and run some fast races and winning 2 of his last 3 starts. And I just think there's a lot of speed in this 5th season. I think he's going to be able to sit right behind the early leaders and get a good ground saving trip. And if you can avoid, you know, A, getting shuffled back, or B, getting caught in traffic, I think he'll be ready to pounce when they turn for home. So I do like the one in the 5th season.
Well, and Tino Deodoro joined us earlier in the week to congratulate him on last week's 3,000th win, as well as the stake victory. And at Oakland,
30% win for this meet. He didn't have like the best fall, and it's been a little bit chilly there at Oakland. I'm going to look at hot jockey in race number 10, the finale. It's a 3-year-old maiden at a mile and a 16th. I'm taking a swing and a price here too. Number 1, it was this big. He's 15-1 on the morning line with Francisco Arrieta. Arrieta, Torres, and Bayerano are all up at the top of the standings. I think they've been riding great at Oakland. And this exaggerator colt showed nothing sprinting his first time, Steve, at Churchill. I really liked his effort last time. I thought it was a big improvement. I liked how he showed speed that day, chasing the pace there. I mean, he really chased a hot quarter. Even in his first race, I will say this, he was up, he wasn't too far back, and they were going 21 and change. Last time they went 22 and change, and he was up there trying to chase it. And I think he's going to move forward off that effort. Not much speed on paper. I think he's going to go from the inside with Francisco Arrieta. And I've got just some questions surrounding Rocket and Roll and Shopper's Revenge. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see either one win. This could be a race where I'm like doing some keys and some tries and exactas with those two and others, but I'm going to take a shot. But number 1, it was this big at 15-1 in the finale.
So a couple of doubles, the 9th, 10th, the double with the 1 horses, Soy Tapatio, and it was this big, and the double in the 4th and 5th too, actually. Two Eagles River instead of Verifying, and Stellar Lily, so a 2-6 double in the 4th and 5th.
Correct.
I like it. All right. James, any last second Friday push?
I do.
I do. In the finale today at Aqueduct, I like Nero. I don't have it right in front of me.
All right, I got it in front of me. Nero.
I think there's a bunch of speed in there. I didn't think he ran poorly. He ran second on the main track at Belmont back in the days. Going back to the main track, he's bred to relish. His dam was a stakes winner in the slot, Steve. So I think a wet main track will be no issue. I think he's in good form. I think he's got a shot to come flying late at a price. I like Nero in the finale at Aqueduct today.
I'll tell you what, coming off the win, and you know, that's an interesting pick, because you're right. There's no shortage of speed, and this is actually a very good allowance, and 6.5. Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm not sure what the weather's like up there, but
it was terrible here all night. It was raining in the city, I know, because I talked to Andy last night. He was on his way out for a dinner, and the rain was coming down. This is Bobby Roboto and Mark Keller, and you mentioned the stake winning dam. My Dinah was a wonderful victory. Holy cow! Haven't thought about her in 100 years, but that was the late John Hettinger and the late Kathleen Fearon. My Dinah, love it, love it.
All right, Steve. Well, thanks for having me on. I hope you have a great weekend.
You too, James Scully, everybody. And there's your for those that want to get the note down, the last second Friday push in the nightcap of the pick six sequence. Nuro, the 4, 12-1, and Jalen Samwell is he. How many other mounts? He's got mounts. But I think he's been, if I'm not mistaken, I think Samwell's been, hasn't he been sidelined? Right? That's what I thought. He's been on the shelf. So, coming back, and I guess he rode a couple, one last week, and then yesterday he rode for John Pregman, as it happens. But he's got he's back with Pregman tomorrow, and he's got today. No, he's not on anything today, so he's got Nuro today, and then tomorrow or Sunday he's riding for Roboto again. So Jalen Samwell trying to get back in the swing of things. There you go. All right. Let me, we're getting close to the top of the hour. Let's see if we should, because Keith Shamblin can join us. I could, we can go to right to Hammer. This is a little bit of a tricky decision. I think, you know what, let's slip. I think we're going to slip Hammer in. I think we'll slip, well, I could, I guess we could shift him back later. So, all right. Well, I think we're going to go ahead. We're going to go ahead and let's get Hammer in here. All right. Yeah, let's do it that way. I think that's I don't think he's got a ton of, to be honest, I don't think he did. We'll see. Well, now we got a real problem, because we can't get through to Hammer. So, all right. You know what, Case? I think we're close enough to the top of the hour. Let's take the break instead, and we'll figure out if we're going to see if Keith Shamblin is available now, and that'll make it a little bit easier. Coming up, in addition to Keith and Hammer, Scott Shapiro, Dave Hill as well, Nick, Mike Welch, and Popo, we'll get some form to win plays. I talked to Marty McGee this morning, actually. Marty was funny. Sends me a text. It must have been about 6:50. Are you up? Am I up? Come on! Am I up? Am I up? Yes. Yes. If I'm not up by 6:50, call the coroner. Because I'm dead. I guess I am going to have to officially dust off the tuxedo. We are going to attend the Eclipse Awards, and we'll join Marty. Marty's got to work. Marty's covering it. I'll just be doing paparazzi, taking lots of pictures. So, but yeah, Marty. He didn't have to twist my arm. No, he didn't twist my arm at all. Happy to go. Happy to celebrate Jay and everybody else. That Oaklawn, the Oaklawn card. I think we'll get some more views from Shap. I think in addition to Turfway, he looked at the Oaklawn slate. And you know, the one problem with, not problem, but the one challenge is that main special for Archie Breads. That's smack dab in the middle, as Buster Poindexter would sing. We should actually add that I'll send you the link to that case. I think we got to add. Should have some Buster, right? We should have some. David Johansen, part of the principal cast member of Let It Ride. So we really should have a Buster Poindexter musical interlude on the show. I it's amazing that hadn't occurred to me till now. Remember when that album came out? Right? What had to be what? 86, 88, 85? It was an absolute sensation, right? At the time. Here, I got to look it up. Now I'm interested to see what year. 87. Smack dab in the middle is one that I like, but what was the hot, 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 right? Was the thing that was played all over the... It was in the clubs. It was... everybody was doing the ridiculous cha-cha line dancing. Back after this, hour two at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why in the